Welcome back to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. I'm your host, Katrine, and today we have with us Annika. Hello, Annika.
Hi.
And you were telling me that you grew up in New York. What age did your family move there?
I was 5 when we first moved. I had just turned 6 when we moved into our house, and I spent most of my life there.
Great. And your family raised you LDS?
Yep. My mother converted when she was in her early 20s. My father was raised Mormon. I was raised in a strong LDS family, baptized at 8, everything that you'd expect.
Did you have any siblings?
I have one brother who's younger than me, so just the two of us.
Okay. Did you like living in New York?
Yeah. My brother and I were homeschooled by our mother until 7th and 8th grade, respectively. And I love the country in New York, because I was in northern New York. The town I lived in was actually 15 minutes from Canada and an hour from Vermont, so it was very, very north. And it was just north of the Adirondack Mountains, and it was beautiful and rolling hills, and you can stand in my mother's back field and look north and see this great plain that is Canada, and it's just beautiful. And my brother and I spent our youth just wandering around other people's fields and running, you know, making forts and playing with sticks and picking wild raspberries and just having a good time. We had a really good childhood. It was a little lonely because there were some homeschool groups in the area, but we didn't really do much with them. And we were pretty much the only kids our age at church, so we didn't really have anyone to play with. But besides that, I had a really good childhood.
Okay. So it was pretty rural there. And why did your mom decide to homeschool you?
She did not like the public school system. She felt like it was really just there to babysit kids until they were adults, and she didn't feel like it did a good job of educating. She wanted us to be well-rounded. Actually, when I went into 8th grade in Wendard Public School, I could name every single country in Africa, South America, and most of the countries in Asia and the Middle East.
Wow.
And I went into school with kids who could barely find China on a map. So
it sounds like your mom was good at homeschooling.
She was a really good teacher. She wasn't the best at math, teaching math, but she was a very good teacher, and she was incredibly passionate about it. We had a lot of fun.
Great. And how was it making that transition into public school?
Pretty awful. Up to that point, I had had virtually no experience with kids my own age who weren't religious. There were just a few people at church who I knew, but I wasn't really friends with. And then in our homeschool group, most of the people we hung out with there were either very practicing Catholic or Baptist ministers' children. So going into a public school with that large, I say large, my graduating class was 52 people, a large group of kind of secular kids, it was really traumatic, and I didn't really get over the culture shock until I was about halfway through my senior year. So it took about 4.5 years.
Just some time to graduate and move on.
Yeah. I started making friends by around February of my senior year.
Oh, so it still sounds like it was kind of lonely for you.
It was not fun. I had a couple people who I hung out with, but they weren't friends, really. I had a couple teachers that I really liked, but yeah, it was lonely and depressing and hard, and I was glad to be done.
How about young women's? Did you find any friendships there?
No. I was pretty much the only girl in Young Women's for most of my time there. Let's see. When I went in at 12, there were two other girls there, but they were out by the time I was 13 or 14. And then there were a few girls who joined while I was in, but they didn't really stay active for very long. So it was just me, really, in the entire branch. So,
were there any young men?
Yeah, there was a family that had three boys about my age. And then there was my brother. My brother went inactive when he was about 17, though. And those three young men ignored me consistently for about 12 years. So they were not friends.
So how was Young Women's done? Because I went to only one time. I was in a class by myself because everyone happened to be absent that day. And it was so awkward because it was just me and the teacher staring at each other. Was that your every Sunday, or how did they handle that?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was.
Fun.
I had a Young Women's president and a first counselor. And most classes, they'd start a lesson, and then it would sort of turn into them talking about their kids, and I just sort of sat in a corner and twiddled my thumbs. My Young Women's president was actually the mother of the three young men who are approximately my age. So it was a small branch.
How many people were in the ward?
Usually about 30 people were at church consistently. Sometimes it fluctuated, but it held steady around 30 people for most of my time there.
Was the primary larger than the young men and young women?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but not by much. There were probably about 6 kids in primary, depending on the week.
Wow. I can't even imagine a primary that small. Wow. So, sounds like even Young Women's was lonely for you.
Yeah.
Were there any stake activities, or it was just branch? I'm not sure. I'm not really familiar how branches work.
Yeah, a couple times a year we'd have stake activities. We usually did a temple trip about once a year. We'd go to either the Palmyra Temple or the Montreal Temple, which was a little closer. Actually, it was a lot closer. And then we'd have beginning of the school year events. But I didn't really, because I spent so much time growing up alone and only hanging out with adults, I had a very hard time understanding people my age and interacting. And I never was able to really make any friends. And also, I only saw them for, you know, maybe 3 or 4 times a year. So even though they lived maybe an hour and a half away, which was relatively close, I never saw them ever. So,
oh, I'm lonely for you. It's kind of sad.
It was really lonely, and I didn't realize how lonely it was until I left, which was actually kind of a good thing.
Yeah, I guess so. How was your belief? Did you have a testimony through Young Women's? Did you strongly believe in the faith?
Yes, I had to, because I was the only one. I was the only girl in Young Women's. I was the only member in my high school, pretty much, because I don't really count my brother because he went inactive. I was I was one of the only youth in the whole county, so I had to be strong. It was an absolute imperative. I had to. One of the things that my Young Women's president said, I swear she said every week, was, "You may be the only Book of Mormon someone ever reads." And so I spent all of my adolescence trying to be the best person I could, trying to be as nice as I could and as good as I could and follow all the rules and, you know, do everything that the Young Women's Manual said and everything that For the Strength of Youth said. And it was a lot of stress, and I never really felt like I was very good at it, because I'm a very introverted person, and it seemed like the model Mormon girl was outgoing and had lots of friends and got and did, you know, was involved in school activities or some sort of sport and, you know, went out and did things. And I never could do any of those things, and I never dressed the way I thought I was supposed to dress to be the perfect Mormon girl. I couldn't make friends. I was really bad at it. I didn't really do any school activities. And I just, there was a lot of pressure to be perfect, and I constantly felt like I was failing at it.
Was there depression along with that? Because the feelings of failure you were having?
Yeah, I was, I wouldn't say I was really depressed, but I was mildly depressed through most of high school.
Were you able to tell your parents how you were feeling?
Yeah. Actually, my mother and I had a lot of discussion about trying to be good and trying to be the best. So, we never really did anything about it. It was just sort of something that we discussed, but I believe my parents were aware that it was hard.
You mentioned your brother had gone inactive. Did you understand why he chose that? Were you worried about it? What were your feelings?
I had no idea why. I was kind of worried about it. I was worried that he'd lose his priesthood. I was worried that he'd go out and do things he wasn't supposed to, which, you know, air quotations, wasn't supposed to, which he was doing, but I didn't know about. It was a little worrisome, but I didn't, you know, I just let him do what, you know, he wanted to do. I didn't pester him about anything. So he was actually, for a little while after he left, he was going to a Methodist church because several of his friends from school went there, but after a couple weeks, he just didn't go to church at all.
Okay. All right, so you graduated and ready to move on to Relief Society.
And I graduated from seminary.
Oh, you didn't talk about seminary.
Seminary was interesting.
Was it early morning?
No, there were only three of us in seminary. And because it was my brother and I and one of the young men, and because we lived so far apart from everybody, we had it once a week. One a year we had it at the church building, and then the rest of the time, the two other years, we had it at our teacher's house. I did 3 years of actual seminary. My first year of seminary, the branch president decided it would be a great idea if the missionaries taught it, and they sort of build it as a seminary, but also a way for new members to learn about the gospel thing. So it really wasn't seminary, and I didn't learn anything, and the missionaries were terrible teachers, and I hated it. So my senior year of high school, I had to do Book of Mormon so that I could graduate. So I did my senior year of high school, I did 2 years of seminary in one, and I was the only youth in my branch who graduated seminary. Of the two of us that could have, I was the one that did.
I'm thinking that once a week seminary sounds pretty nice myself.
Yeah, it was mostly self-study. It was really good. Yeah. It was nice, and it was in the evening, so we didn't have to get up early.
Yeah. How funny. But you graduated all 4 years, a four-year degree.
Yep.
Good for you. You were devoted to get up 2 years in one.
I was. I really pushed it that last year. I got both of them done, and I was incredibly proud of myself. So.
Great. So you got your seminary degree and diploma, and you got your high school diploma. Did you stay home after graduation?
After graduation, my plan was to do a two-year degree at the community college, and then serve a mission. I did a year at the community college. Interestingly enough, my mother was hired as an adjunct English teacher the same year I started college, and she was my English teacher. Wow. It was fun. She's a good teacher, so I didn't mind. I did 1 year of community college and worked part-time at the local library. And I was just so depressed that I decided I couldn't stay there another year. So I'd been hearing about Southern Virginia University from a bunch of people in my branch. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'll apply. And I didn't think I'd actually get in. So I figured I'll apply to Southern Virginia University. If I don't get in, I'm going to take all of my money and I'm going to go backpack around England. But I got in. So that next fall, I went to Southern Virginia University.
Okay. And did you like that better than the community college?
It was amazing. I loved it so much. It was the biggest school I'd ever been to at that point. My community college has 3 branches, and I was not at the main branch, so it was maybe 200 people.
Wow.
And it was, there were no dorms, so all the students there lived at home. Southern Virginia University, when I started, had just about 800 students, and that was big to me. And I loved it. It's nestled right in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's in Buena Vista, Virginia. It's the most beautiful place. It's amazing. The campus sits up on a hill, and from the main hall, you can look down into the town in this valley, and the girls' dormitories are high up on a hill, and from the girls' dormitories, you can look down all through campus, and there are trees, and it's green, and all the buildings are red brick, and actually the main building used to be a girls' seminary back in the late 1800s. And I loved Southern Virginia University. It was amazing. I met my best friend there. The professors are wonderful. I love my professors from SVU. I will always love them. It was a wonderful education, the 2 years I was there.
This sounds fantastic. How was it living away from home? Did you enjoy that change of...
Yeah. Well, okay. The first night I was homesick. The first night. And after that, and that was mostly because I was on a top bunk and I don't like top bunks. But it was fine. It was really nice. I really enjoyed being on my own. It was really the first time I'd been on my own like that. I enjoyed making my own schedule and doing my own things and getting myself to class, and it was really fun. I loved it.
Total freedom.
Yeah. In a strict environment.
Okay. Did you feel total freedom when it came to religion as well? Did you keep up the Mormon pace?
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's funny because I've never been really comfortable at church, even though I was a firm believer and had a really strong testimony. I never liked church. I always went because I thought that's what God wanted me to do, not because I liked it. And so, like 90% of the people I went to school with were Mormon, but I went to church every Sunday, and I loved that it was a 3-hour block because in my home branch, it had always been a 2-hour block, but I never stayed any longer than I absolutely had to.
I did want to ask you, you had mentioned that you were made a Relief Society president at age 19. Was that at home or was that at the university?
It was Young Women's President.
Oh, Young Women's President.
Yeah, and that was a few months after I graduated from high school in my home branch. Yeah.
Were there any young women?
One.
I mean, you were alone for so long. Were you your own young woman president?
It was me, and it was my old young woman president's daughter, who was 12 at the time, so.
Sounds so entertaining.
It was, yeah. I wasn't young woman's president for very long, but it was an interesting experience. I was also the chorister in my home branch for years. So, although I don't think, I was never actually set apart for that calling. I was called, and then I was doing it. Then I was called to do it, and then I was never set apart, but I just kept doing it.
Well, there was no one else.
Pretty much.
Okay, so we're at the university. The church became kind of a social outlet for you, it sounds like. The school.
The school was a social outlet. The church wasn't.
Okay.
I didn't even... They broke... There were about four student wards, or student branches, rather, and each branch was broken into family home evening groups. And I never went to family home evening, except for the one semester that my best friend was the mother of the group. I never went. I didn't go to... They had these activity nights. I hardly ever went to those. But the school was a social outlet. The other things, like going to concerts or dance performances or dances or debates, that was my social outlet. Never really church.
And how long were you at Virginia?
I was there for 2 years and 2 weeks. About 2 weeks into my junior year, I moved to California. So,
big move.
Yeah, it was.
And what took you to California?
My best friend's mother called her one morning and told her that her stepfather had been killed in a hit and run when he was skateboarding home from work, and my best friend wanted to go home and take care of her mother, and she has a lot of friends. My best friend is one of those people who you meet and you just instantly love. And she had a lot of friends in California, but the vast majority of them were guys, and I knew that they would take really good care of her, but I also realized that she would need a girl to be able to confide in. So I offered to go with her, and the next morning, we were on a plane to California with three suitcases between the two of us. So.
What did your family think about that move, especially since it was so last minute?
They weren't particularly happy about it. My father, when I called my father and told him, he said, okay, but I want you back in school in the next couple of weeks. My mother didn't really say anything. My mother has always been really good about letting me make my own choices and just sort of going with it. My father was definitely not happy, but I didn't go back to school, even though he wanted me to. my friend and I got a house. We were able to rent a house for a really good price, and right next to her mother's place. And I got a job and stayed there and paid the rent and lived there for a year. And she was there for that semester, and then she went back to SVU and then came back for the summer.
Oh, so you even stayed while she left again?
Yep.
Okay. And I know that California has a much longer LDS culture than New York and Virginia. So did that change for you, that dynamic? There were no longer branches, they were wards, correct?
Yes, but I was in a singles ward, and it was actually a branch. It was because we were in an area with a lot of colleges. Okay. There was a lot of fluctuation, so my singles branch was a branch. Okay. And I was actually living in San Bernardino County, which was first settled by the Mormons.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. All right. Now, I'm not even sure. I'm just not familiar with branches. Is it the same size as wards? Why do they call it a branch?
A branch is smaller, and it has a branch president. A branch president doesn't have the same responsibilities or abilities to act as a bishop does.
Okay. So is there a bishop?
Nope.
Just the branch president.
Yep. And then there's a branch president, and then there's a stake president. So, and the stake president is above several branches.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would the several branches make up the size of what a ward normally would be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Okay. Did you enjoy going to church more in California?
No. It wasn't really fun. I really liked my branch president. He was an artist, and my father is an artist, so I was able to create a good friendship with him. My visiting teacher was really good. She picked me up. I don't have a car, so And I didn't then, so she picked me up for church every week. And we were very different, but we were able to find ways to get along and communicate and have a good time. And, you know, she was really nice. She was a return missionary, but I never really liked it that much. And honestly, I felt pretty ignored for the first 3 or 4 months I was there. It wasn't actually until my friend got back after we'd moved to California. She'd gone back to school and then come back for summer and started going to church with me, that people in the branch started to recognize that, hey, this girl actually comes here every week.
She's still here.
Yeah, look at that. She's a person and she's here every week. Let's talk to her. But, I mean, it was partly my fault because I didn't really want to have anything to do with them, even though I went to church with them every week. I just, even though they were supposed to be the group of people that I was friends with because they were my branch and they were Mormon, I just didn't really get along with any of them or had nothing in common with them or just didn't really like them that much. And I'd made friends outside of church and I just liked them so much more.
Why did you keep going to church?
Because that's what God wanted me to do. It was the true church. And that's what you do. You go to church because that's what God wants.
You still believed and you just did what you were told to do.
Yep.
Do it. Okay.
Yep. I'd been in California for about 6 months, and that was right when the age change for missionaries came along, and all of a sudden, a bunch of the girls in my branch started preparing for missions and getting calls, and I thought, well, you know what, maybe I'm supposed to go on a mission.
That was your original plan, wasn't it? Go to school for a little bit and then go on a mission?
It was, yeah.
Did you start preparing for a mission?
Yeah, I really felt strongly that I was supposed to go, but I was also very uncomfortable with the idea of having to teach certain things. I really did not like the idea of having to teach celestial polygamy. I was very uncomfortable with that idea. I've never really been comfortable with the way women have been treated in the church. I always felt marginalized as a woman in the church. So, while filling out my mission papers, I also started doing research. And my father, actually, my parents got divorced my first year of SVU, and my father stopped going to church about at that time. So I was talking to him about my experiences, and he suggested that I read No Man Knows My History by Fawn Brody. Mm-hmm. So I got I bought that and read it, and I was reading it and something would come up and I'd think, oh, well, that's not good, but you know, I can explain it with this. Or, you know, oh, this thing's not good, but I can explain it away with this. And then we got to Joseph's polygamy and polyandry, and I was like, okay, nope. That's not inspired. It's over. And, I don't know what you want to call it, falling away, transition away, it happened really fast. It was within a couple of weeks that I went from like a liberal Mormon to a complete non-believer. I was reading all this stuff and I didn't want to judge things until I'd experienced them. So I didn't want to make any judgments about anything to do with the temple until I'd been through the temple. And so I went to my branch president and asked if I could have a temple recommend and get my endowments.
Was this before you read Fawn Brody or after?
This was after.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'd heard these sort of negative things on the fringes of what I'd been reading on the internet and in books about the temple, and I didn't want to make any judgments until I'd experienced it myself. So I asked if I could get my endowments, and my branch president said, well, I want you to take temple prep class first. And I said, okay, thinking to myself, I can do that, but I already know it's not going to tell me anything. but at that point, we didn't have a temple prep class. And by the time they created one, about 4 weeks later, I was so far past that point. I was completely out.
You had no longer had interest in going to the temple?
None whatsoever. In fact, when I first started questioning, I think this was before I read No Man Knows My History, we had a branch temple trip, and I went and I thought, this'll really help me, and I'll go to the temple, and I'll feel the spirit, and, you know, this will really cement my faith. And I went, and it didn't do anything for me. We were doing baptisms for the dead, and, you know, you have to wear those ridiculous jumpsuits, and you have your key attached to the zipper with a pin, and I was sitting on the bench waiting my turn, and the three women next to me were gossiping about someone else, and it had so much of the opposite effect of what I expected and what I really wanted, because I really wanted it to be true. I wanted to feel the spirit in that temple, and it just wasn't there.
So you didn't make it to the temple. Had you ever received your patriarchal blessing?
Yes, I got that when I was 18.
Was that faith-affirming for you?
It was. We didn't have a patriarch in our area, so my parents and I actually made a trip to Vermont to go see a patriarch. Never met the man before, haven't ever met him since. It was a wonderful experience. I loved it. I had my patriarchal blessing and, you know, read it regularly.
When you lost your faith, did you ever look back at that blessing and try to gain some of that former feeling you had?
Well, I would have loved to. However, because I'd moved so much, my patriarchal blessing was in New York, and I wasn't 100% where it was, so I couldn't have my mother go get it out of my bedroom and send it to me. And I still haven't. I would love to read it now, but still, it's somewhere in my packed belongings in New York in my mother's basement, and I just don't really have access to it.
I know that a lot of time faith transitions are really hard on people and very emotional. Was that your experience?
For me, it was very joyous.
Really?
Yeah, I felt free all of a sudden. I felt like for the first time in my life, I didn't have to judge people. I could just walk down the street and see people for people and not think, oh, her shirt doesn't have sleeves, you know. Oh, her skirt's too short. You know, I didn't have to think that anymore. And it was really liberating. I was learning so much, and it didn't feel like I was learning new things. It felt like I was learning, like I had known this stuff and forgotten it. And then all this stuff that I was reading all about, you know, temple ceremonies and Joseph's polyandry and all this stuff was just, I'd forgotten it, and it was coming back to me. And you know the part in Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail where he's on the cliff and he has to walk across the chasm, but he can't see the bridge?
Right.
Well, I felt like all my life I'd been walking on a ledge on a mountainside, and I'd been told, you have to stay as close to the mountain as you can. If you move even a foot away from the mountain, you're going to fall off, and it's going to be awful, and you're going to die. But I felt like Indiana Jones, like I was taking cautious steps away into this whiteness, and I couldn't see where I was stepping. But every time I stepped, I was on solid ground, and then just this vast oasis of potential, and in my brain, it's white, just opened up to me. And I was able to move for the first time. That's how it felt. That's how I envision it in my head.
Nice. I wish that's how it was for everyone that had this crisis of faith.
I wish so too. And it really helped that I haven't been married, that I was able to do this single. And it really helped that I was able to do this without family around. I think not having family near me at the time was really helpful.
Mm-hmm. You said your father had gone inactive and your brother had, your mom, was she remained in the church?
Yeah, my mother's still a faithful member.
And how does she feel about your change?
She's not happy about it, but I talked to her about it, and she said that even though she's not happy, she realizes that we have to make our own decisions, and this is my decision, so.
It's a lot better reaction than a lot of people get.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think it helps that she's a convert, and her parents never belonged to a church, and her brother and her sister don't belong to any church. I think it helps that she has grown up with different views and has those around her, so.
She's got to be feeling that loneliness that you've felt before, now that she's the only one. Do you think?
Yeah, well, I think she's always been lonely in the church. She doesn't really have a lot of friends in the church. My mother is very much an individual, but some people, you know, just don't really like individuals. They want people who conform more, and my mother just doesn't do that. She is who she is, and for that reason, especially in the Mormon church, I think it's very hard for her to have a lot of friends.
Do you consider her more of a liberal Mormon?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I'd say she's about in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in California. You decide you don't want to go to the temple, which meant you weren't going on a mission.
Yep.
What about your friend you were living with? Was she aware that you had this change?
She was very aware of it. And actually, we would have the missionaries over. And she grew up, her mother is a member, but was inactive for most of her childhood, and she would actually go to church by herself as, you know, as a 12-year-old. And she loves having the missionaries over because she likes to learn. And I talked to her, and then the missionaries came over, and I told them that they could come over, and they could talk to Bev, and that was completely fine with me, but if they wanted to talk to me, I was going to bring up things that might make them uncomfortable, and if they didn't like that, then don't talk to me. And they said okay, and they came over, and they were really good about having discussions with me. Neither of us convinced the other one of what we were talking about, but they were very nice about it.
Okay, so they did choose to discuss things with you.
Yes.
Did you bring up polyandry?
I can't remember if I did. We didn't really get past the, I don't believe the Book of Mormon is an inspired work about real people.
Okay.
That kind of really stumped them, and we never moved past that point, really. My friend Bev had explained to them that I was a Cartesian, and I needed to break everything down to the basic, to the very basic building blocks before I could ever build anything up again. But, you know, they're young missionaries, and I don't think they understand Cartesian philosophy.
Okay, you had mentioned that one reason you were concerned about going on a mission is you didn't want to teach celestial polygamous marriage.
Yes.
But the missionaries do not teach that. Did you ever bring that up to them? Like,
no. And I don't think most missionaries even know about that.
Exactly.
But I did. I'm not really sure how.
Yeah, how did you know about that? did you actually read the Doctrine and Covenants?
well, Oh, gosh, that's hard. My father has always been a thinker, and he had a lot of books by Gilliatti. I think his name is Abraham Gilliatti. He was sort of involved in the September 6th, I think. And I never finished one of his books, but I started one, and there was a lot of stuff about...
That's intense reading for a high school student, which is about the age you would have been, right?
Yeah, I was about 16 or 17. I didn't feel intense at the time. But yeah, one of those books was all about, or at least the part that I read, the chapter I read, was about eternal or a Heavenly Father and Heavenly Mother, and a lot of talk about how Heavenly Mother is in the Bible and all this stuff. And so I was very aware of that, and I don't know how I learned about celestial
bleeding. I think your dad is slipping you information.
It just seemed like it was something I always knew, like, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how it works. I don't know where I learned that. It just seems like it was always there.
Your dad obviously knew some troubling facts about the church. And then after his divorce, he went inactive. Do you feel he stayed active for your mom? I don't want you to talk about things you don't think he'd want you to.
No, that's fine. I don't really know, to be honest. I just don't know.
Okay. So you're in California. You're telling the missionaries. You're giving them a caution sign when they talk to you. was it soon after that you moved to Utah?
Let's see. I was getting kind of restless, and I decided I need to go back to school. And I'd actually gone out to California twice during the summer when I was in California to visit relatives, because I have relatives in Salt Lake, in the Salt Lake area. And my father had come out a couple of times, so I had talked to him, and he really pushed University of Utah, and I have a couple relatives who graduated from there. And at that point, I thought, you know what, I've been to two colleges already. I don't really care. So I said, okay, what the heck, I'll go to University of Utah. So I went back to California. I stayed until the end of October.
Of 2013?
2013. Then moved back to New York and stayed there for a few months because I wanted to see my mother and, you know, her family before I moved out here to Utah. And then I moved to Utah on Christmas Eve of 2013. So,
okay. Are you living with family members, or did you get an apartment?
I stayed with an aunt and uncle until I was able to find my own apartment. And now I'm renting a room, and I got a job soon after I got my room, so.
And what do you think of Zion?
It's too hot. It is way too hot. I do not like the heat. Other than that, I really like it. I love where I'm living. My landlord is really good. He's a really good, great guy. I get along with his kids. I love my job. I'm a waitress. I've never waitressed before. I absolutely love it. I love my coworkers. I get along with them really well. I like my boss. I feel like I'm making friends here. I'm having fun. I just really don't like the heat.
Did you remove your name from the records of the church?
Well, for several months, actually for quite a while I didn't. And I talked to my father about it. And his advice was just don't do anything and see how you feel after a space of time, however long that space of time is. And so I didn't for a while because I felt like by removing my name, I would be admitting that they had power over me, and I didn't want to give them that power, so I just didn't do anything. However, after the excommunication of Kate Kelly, I decided that it was time. So 2 days after the excommunication of Kate Kelly, I sent in my letter of resignation.
Have you heard back from the church yet?
Yeah, I got my form letter.
How did that feel?
Well, I'm not really sure, to be honest. I was expecting a lot of emotion, either negative or positive, and it was really just sort of, okay, well, that's that then. And it's really not affected me that much at all, I don't think.
Nice. I envy that for you, that you can move on and not have that emotional baggage.
Yeah, you know, I actually had more emotion when I pierced my ears for the second time than I did when I received my confirmation letter from the church.
Why is that?
Well, it's funny because I got my nose pierced, and that was, there was nothing with that, just pain because it hurts like hell, but I got my ears pierced again, and, you know, you're always told how, well, at least I was, because I was right in that time right after Hinckley gave his don't pierce your ears twice talk, and it was just always drilled into you, don't pierce your ears a second time because it's just evil or something. And so I hadn't realized how ingrained that was. And I had it done, and I knew I liked it. I really liked it, but at the same time I felt almost dirty for doing it. And I felt that way for about 2 days, and then I got over it. But yeah, that was more than I felt when I got my confirmation of my resignation letter.
That's funny. I had my ears double pierced when I was like 18, I think. And then for whatever reason, they just grew back in. I just stopped putting earrings in them. And then the talk came out about not double piercing your ears. So I was like, well, I guess I won't do it again. And then about a month ago, I just got in the car, drove to the tattoo parlor, let some burly guy with a sign on his wall said no whining allowed, and let him put double piercings in my ear. And I didn't show anyone. I mean, I wasn't hiding it, but I didn't show anyone. And my husband and daughter just kind of discovered it on their own. And I liked it, but the same thing, I kind of felt like if people looked, they would read my mind. They would know what I was thinking. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a liberating experience. Something as silly as a double piercing, huh?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It was fun. I really like mine. And it's funny because I grew up reading The Chronicles of Narnia, and my father had a copy of the Bhagavad Gita in the house, and I never read it because it was this really thick, scary edition, but it had pictures of gods in it. And I always felt like if God really loved me, then when Jesus came again, he would appear to me as Aslan, because I had more of an emotional connection to him than I had to Jesus. And at the same time, I've always had a very, I think partially because of reading the Chronicles of Narnia so much, I always had a very pagan view of Christianity. I had a very pagan worldview, and I loved those pictures of those blue Hindu gods. From the time I was about 10 or 12 years old, I would say to my mother, if I wasn't Mormon, I'd get my nose pierced.
So she probably wasn't surprised by the nose ring.
I don't know if she was or not, but that's something that I'd wanted for a really long time and hadn't done because it was against the rules.
And when did you get that done?
I got it done, I think it was October 12th. There was a tattoo parlor half a block away from my work, and I got off work and walked to the tattoo parlor and filled out a lot of paperwork and got my nose pierced.
So it's fairly recent, too.
Yeah. It's
so your mother
about
hasn't
9 months.
Seen it.
No, she's seen it because I had it when I moved back.
Oh, okay.
So she's seen it.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's not as big of a deal because my brother got piercings way before I did. He pierced his own ears multiple times with sewing needles, and he got his nose done way before I got mine done. So by the time I did any of this stuff, it was old hat because my brother had already done it to himself.
At least you paid somebody responsible.
Exactly.
Did you ever talk to your brother about what you were believing now?
A little bit. Not much. We don't really talk that much.
Is he still in New York?
Yeah, he lives in New York City right now. He's going to school, and we're very, very, very different people. He's extremely extroverted. He's very physical. He bikes everywhere in New York City. He runs. Actually, one of his jobs is a running coach in schools. And I'm a very quiet, passive, introverted person. I like to sit, or if I'm going to go somewhere, I like to walk. I don't like to run. And once we started public school, we just sort of separated, and we didn't really have a close relationship. We still don't really have a very close relationship. But we went out to visit him for Thanksgiving last year, and I talked to him a little bit about it then. And then, actually, we had a family reunion a couple weeks ago, and he came out for that, and we talked a little bit then. And I think he's cool with what I'm doing, and he's doing his thing, and he's just pretty open and accepting, and, you know, if you're doing what you want and you're happy, then that's cool with me, kind of a thing. So, again, he left for very different reasons, and I don't know if my reasons really resonate with him at all.
Now, you had brought several journals. She's a journal writer. She's got a stack here. Was there anything you wanted to share?
I'm currently on my 22nd journal, closely catching up to my age. Well, I wasn't really sure what I would need for this, because I've never done this sort of thing before, but I was just going through them and remembering old times, and there was one lesson that I wrote about that really comes to mind looking at my stack of journals. Actually, when I was in Young Women's, my Young Women's president, her oldest son served a mission in Russia, and when he got home from his mission, he was made Young Men's president, which is not really surprising, because there weren't very many people to fill that role.
Young Men's president for that one single little young man.
For his brothers.
For his brothers.
And I don't really know what was going on. Looking back, I think he was seriously questioning, and his mother was afraid that he'd sully the youth or something, so she decided that she needed to take over Young Men's.
What?
So, I was actually, and so my Young Women's president sort of took over Young Men's and dragged me along with her, so I actually spent about a year in Young Men's. We didn't even have Young Women's for about a year when I was about 17.
So, she became the Young Men's president.
Pretty much.
And you were in the Young Men's.
So I was in Young Men's. And that, I remember a very specific lesson. She was teaching it, and we were talking about chivalry.
I can't even get over this. I'm sorry. I can't imagine myself walking into the Young Men's. Okay, I'm here to teach you about priesthood. And that would not go over. That's mind-boggling to me. Young Men's would be a much different place if the women could be in charge.
Well, this was a very small branch, and pretty much all the members were converts. So we just sort of did things a little differently. So yeah, that definitely happened.
That's awesome. Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just couldn't get past that. So she's teaching chivalry.
She's teaching this class about
which
chivalry.
Which I don't think is in the Young Men's manual.
I think she pretty much ignored the manuals. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she just ignored the manuals. But anyway, so she was teaching this class about chivalry. And her oldest son was... Well, she was... I can't remember. We were talking about opening the doors for women or something. And you know, and we were discussing whether or not men should do that. And her oldest son, who just got back from his mission, said, you know what? That's baloney. The guys who, in the MTC, who did that for women, were the ones who would rush there first and get in line first so that they'd already have food, so they would be in line for seconds, and they'd tell everybody else, oh, let the sisters go first, let the sisters go first. And at the time, I felt incredibly betrayed because I felt like I felt like I wasn't respected as a woman and that that wasn't maybe true. And I felt silence. I felt like I couldn't answer because I don't really know why. I just felt like I couldn't make a rebuttal. And I felt betrayed and silenced and small. And looking back on it now, he's probably completely right. And now I would probably agree with him, even though I've never been to the MTC. But at the time, it was just incredibly marginalizing. And I just sat in a corner silently because I felt like I couldn't say anything.
Sounds like Young Men's was fun.
Oh, yeah, it was a hoot.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to...
No, I don't think so. I'm loving life.
The options are yours.
They are. I can do whatever I want.
Have you been to Temple Square?
I walked through it quickly and briefly with a friend because it was a shortcut. I went years ago, but besides that brief shortcut, I haven't been since.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Annika. I appreciate your time to come down and spend with me.
Thanks for having me.
And if you also want to be on Mormon Expression Voices, go ahead and send me an email at voices@mormonexpression.com. And you can also join us on Facebook and on the website. So have a good day. Bye-bye.
Trying to hold back.